I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Music Nomad, our favorite guitar maintenance tool manufacturing masters. You should check them out on musicnomadcare.com or on social media with @musicnomadcare. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Naomi McLeod.
Hello.
Oh, that was high. And JD Short.
Hello.
And that was low. Yes, welcome. Welcome back, dear listener. I've got JD and Naomi back this week as promised. I think spoke about that on the Patreon episode, actually. So sorry, dear listener, if you weren't aware of that. But yes, we're back. We're back for the first time. Well, I think we did maybe an episode after the Bronkhoff, but it's only been a few weeks, so it's lovely to have the two of you back on an episode.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
good to be back.
Yes, indeed. And yeah, we've got like a whole bunch to talk about. We don't know if we're not sure. We said in the Facebook group, dear listener, if you're not on the Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, do go there and join. We had a really good question from Carl Harris, which we thought we might do as part of the episode. But we're going to see. We've got other things to talk about. We might do it in the Patreon. We're going to see what occurs. But first of all, do you know what? This is the first thing I wanted to talk about this week. And I think I spoke about this last week. I actually think I've spoken about it a couple of times, but I wanted to talk to you guys about it as my fellow bass aficionados. I got a Fuzzrocious little fella. I did speak about this last week, but JD, I got a way huge pork loin after your recommendation for the pork and pickle, which, of course, the pork and pickle is the pork loin, which is the overdrive, and the fuzz, which is what's... What's the pickle? Is that the fat sandwich?
It's the Russian pickle, I think.
Oh, the Russian pickle. That's what it is. Yes, of course. Of course, that's what it is. So that is... The pork and pickle is both of those, a drive and a fuzz in one. And it's a very effective bass, the drive or fuzz, because it's got that clean blend, which that's what you recommended to me. You pointed that out to me. And, of course, the pork loin has the same thing. Has the clean blend as well, which is very, very useful.
Yeah, I just think they're really well. The pork and pickle, I think it's just such a versatile pedal, and it's one of the things like I really like both the overdrive and the fuzz on bass, just by themselves, and the fact that you have, well, I'm not sure if this one, but on the pork and pickle, you have the clean blend and then you have the clean tone. So you can sort of, you could roll back your clean tone
to give it a bit more
so that it doesn't get as clanky as sometimes you can kind of get like that the treble's poking through a bit. You can sort of just round out the bottom end a bit. So it really works across loads of different sources. So if I'm playing like different kinds of basses and stuff, I think it's one of my, it's technically my go-to at the moment that I'm going to be using for the next little bit.
So. It's on your board, is it? It's made it onto your board.
Yeah, it made it onto my board for the for the trip to the US for all the Delta Lauda stuff, like shows we're doing at the end of May. So I got a if we want to talk about this.
Yeah, let's segue.
Yeah, I got a... So thank you, Joe, for the pedal train. That was the small for us, but probably medium pedal train.
What was it?
Did you get? Yeah,
a Novo 32 or Novo 24?
I think it was the 24, maybe. Yeah, because I have one of the whatever the largest of the old pedal train boards was. I have one of those as well. So I mean, when I've put all my boards together, it's going to be great. You know, for bass players that have multiple boards. But I ended up getting a pedal train, like the Nano, just because I wanted, well, Matt, the guitar player, has one of those. And I wanted something that I felt I could easily fly with. And it fits in my mono tick anyway. So so I was like, nice. I'll put it in that. I have a case for it, you know, like a sturdy case for it, because I'm like flying to the US, obviously, not already on a boat. And so I'm just going to take that, which is extremely hard for me because I use very few effects in Beltalauta, but there are some I definitely wanted to have. And
did you get the Nano or the Nano Plus? Because I find
just the Nano. Because that's the one that fits in. That's the one that fits in the tick.
In the tick. With,
yeah.
How many pedals can you get on a?
So I have four.
I think it's like four sort of. Boss width is maybe like a fair guess of what you can fit on the Nano.
It's boss small. Width and hopefully top like input output jacked.
Right. Yeah.
So what I have with it, I'm just going, I have octave, I have the pork and pickle, so fuzz overdrive depending on what I need. And I'm taking my phaser, even though I don't ever use it. I did do a little bit of chorusing, but I don't have any chorus pedals at the moment that I kind of want to take. And this is the other thing is with all the travel nightmare that's happening, I'm kind of wanting to take stuff that I definitely really like, but isn't anything that's irreplaceable or really hard to source again.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I have is I have a looper, which I don't use for anything except for we have on one of the tracks, there's a vocalist. So we're basically playing a track along to a poem.
I see.
And so I've loaded that on as a file on the looper. So I'm just using the looper to trigger that voice bit.
So what is the looper? Is it Boss?
It's the Boss RC3.
So does that have two outs? So you can run that to front of house, or is it that just coming out of your bass amp?
I'm running that completely separate. So I'm going to run that just into a DI, straight to house. And then, so the board basically goes into my octave, which is I'm going to use the KMA, Queequeg. The first one, yeah, because I got it just before I saw that there was a V2, like literally 2 days before. And I went with that because I wanted something a bit different than my EBS Octabass that I adore, which is my old one, which is where the ins and outs were reversed in a sense. So the in is on the left and the out's on the right, which makes it
like
really
an
hard
old harmonic percolator. That's terrible.
Yeah, no, and it's and they're also on the side, so it just makes it really hard to be like. Ugh. So I've always played it like rotated 90 degrees,
right?
Like on my boards, but. It doesn't fit on the Nano. No, so it's like, ooh, what to do? And then I have a couple.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I have a Mutron Octavider clone, and also the real, like, old Mutron, which I'm clearly not taking because it's bigger than the Nano itself. So I went with the Queequeg because I was kind of looking at, I really looked at some of the, like, an OC5 or, you know, I was also looking at old OC2s, like mid-80s, and, you know, like...
They don't go for that much money. I don't know why they don't go for more.
Yeah, I think it's probably because they kind of top out, and like, for me, I really love old pedals. Like, I have, like, one of my favorite ones is the CS2, like, sustainer that I have that's old and, you know, looks like it's been at the bottom of the sea for ages, but it's fine. It's just, I ended up not using a compressor on my board because my head has a compressor I like built in, and I was just, yeah. So I was just kind of going for something a little bit different than just buying, which I almost did, was get like a version of the EBS that's just slightly newer that has, you know, the inputs swapped around.
Yeah, nice to use it as an opportunity to actually get something different, I guess, as well.
Yeah, and you know, and really because we had talked about KMA and, you know, like the Worm and everything else, I was like, oh, I kind of wanted some of their stuff. I saw they had this and I was like, yeah, that sounds dope. I'll just try that. And I really liked the, it's a really good synthy sub-octave, which I usually don't like the synthy sub-octave sound. I like a sort of rounder, clearer sine, you know, not digital sounding, but, you know, just still really, like, smooth. And
very analog sounding, the Queequeg.
I really like it. It's, you know, I mean, do I wish I had the V2? Yes. But I really like this, the simple, like, blend knob, which, you know, frankly, is really all I needed. And... yeah, I found some good tones on it. It's cool. I like it. And then, yeah, so it's basically just Queequeg into the Pork and Pickle. The phaser I'm using is, I have a Mutron Phaser 3, which is one of the newer versions of the, like, since Mutron, like, spun up as a company again, like, you know, in the last decade or so.
iZotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on iZotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering, and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions, and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 native instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive, and as we've come to expect from iZotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using iZotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on iZotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the iZotope arsenal.
Like, I have one of their phasers that I picked up a couple years ago when they were...
I know that it's in a normal, like, standard pedal housing, top-mounted jacks.
Yeah, but it sounds really good. Sounds like a lot of sounds pretty close to, like, an actual, the old 70s, like, mains powered ones.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's really good. It's, I think you'd really like it too. Cause it can do really weird, like, phasery sounds, but it's also just a really, really good sounding phaser.
It's on our list of things to talk about today. I'm looking for a new phaser because I redid my board and it's all lovely. And I've got, like, I've got a new compressor with top-mounted jacks, and I've got the Queequeg 2 top-mounted jacks. Then I've got the drive, the little fella
that was going to... Oh, I didn't realize it was top-mounted.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
someone might be on reverb later.
And then I've got the little fella, the fuzz rig, and it's top-mounted jacks. So they're all so neat. And then I've got my MXR Phase 90, and I'm like, you're making this whole thing not neat. So I was trying to think. And also, all the other ones are like fun, cool, interesting boutique pedals. And then I've got a Phase 90. And I know it's because they're just the ultimate slow phaser. But I would like something fun and different. This, the Mutron Phaser 3, maybe that is an option.
I mean, the thing is, like, it's a really, really good phaser. And the thing is, like, it's the kind of phaser you can put on anything. You know, like, it's the sound of the 70s. You right. know, like, perfect. I mean, that's the biphase, but like, it's really good. It's got CV control if you want to do it. You know, it's the kind of stuff that you can easily pair with synth stuff if you're doing it. It's an excellent phaser. Like I have, I wanted something. I have, there's one song, one bass on it. It's kind of Joy Division-y, you know, just, you know, kind of vibes. And so I wanted, you know, chorus or some sort of modulation on it just to give it something. And so, yeah, so I was really looking through like what chorus options I had and some other stuff. And then, you know, yeah, I was like, I have this Mutron phaser. Why don't I use this? Like I love it. And to be fair, I do feel a bit of pressure, making sure I have a cool board. Because if this were just me normally, I'd be like, I don't care. This is, you know, it's a Tube Screamer and whatever. But it's like, no, I need to have cool things. But I also don't want to take my, there's only one of these in the world, or you see these once every 3 years kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And you definitely have a good taste, I think, JD, for that, that echelon of gear. Like one visit to your place when we recorded the Bronkhoff was enough to see several ones of gear that I'd not seen IRL before.
Hmm. Well, thank you. You flatter me.
Okay, so we've got there's the Looper, the Mutron Phaser 3, the Phaser 3, the KMA Queequeg, and the pork and pickle. That's taken up. So what are you using to power it? What power supply have you gone for?
The power supply. I have the Mission Engineering 529, which is the super tiny one that's USB. So it's just powered off of, you know, basically a USB A to B cable that I'll power from the mains.
Very handy.
I got it just as like a quick little like extra board if I just want, or just an extra power supply if I want to have a couple pedals. It's small enough that I can mount it underneath the Nano, and it doesn't, like, there's still, you know, a few millimeters before you hit the ground. So it's really cool, excellent. It's four. They're isolated outputs, which is important for one of the other pedals I have, like that Chandler drive that I have. It requires two separate 9-volt isolated power supplies to function.
Right. Oh wow. Okay.
So it's, but the power supplies, it's five total out, which is fine because I have four. Four 150 milliamps and one 500 milliamp draw for all isolated outs, and it's pretty great. Like they make another one that I keep almost getting that is a rechargeable one as well. So you could technically not even have it with, you know, needing your pedal board could potentially be fully wireless if you
Pedal Train did one like that called the Volto. I got and I was like, I took it to my first band practice. I tell you what, it is really handy. It's for just being around like the house and being like, I've just been sent this pedal, just grab the Pedal Train Volto. It's very handy for just that, powering on the fly. But yeah. I brought it to a band practice and I was like, guys, check on my board that I don't need to plug in the wall. And then, you know, 2 hours into a 3-hour rehearsal, it ran out of juice. But of course, you can't just plug it into the wall then and then get power back. You have to charge it up without it supplying power to it, everything. So I literally was left, I was like, well, I have no board now for the rest of this rehearsal. So there's it's a great idea, provided you are prepared and know how long it's going to last.
I can't remember where I came across this just the 529, but it's such a good tiny power supply. It's been the one I've taken with me for the last few years. Like I'd fly with it if I was taking, you know, like one or two pedals that didn't need like mains power. And it's totally serves me well. Or if, you know, you're going to a rehearsal and you're not sure what you want, or you're just taking a couple pedals, you know, just to see what's there, then yeah, it's excellent. That being said, I am always in the market for whatever the best power supply is, because I shockingly love them. So,
how very Jay Cross
was that
you.
A pun?
Yeah, no, I mean, I will just more than I want to admit, even though I'm admitting it now publicly, more than I want to admit, really like going through specs of power supplies and like, you know, like how steady currents. Do I think it would win Gear of the Year? I think that's still a point of contention, but.
Well, on my Pedal Train Nano Plus, I use the MXR Mini ISO brick, which years ago when it came out, I think Jay Cross did really try and push for it to win Gear of the Year, which is very good for 300 milliamp 9-volt ins, which is excellent. It means that, you know, realistically, you could daisy chain off of all of them and potentially use the Mini ISO brick to run, you know, something like a 12-15 pedal board, provided they're all sort of, you know, 9 volt and not too high a draw. But it's an incredibly small power supply to provide quite as much juice as it does. So that's also very good. Slightly higher powered than your one, than the machine, Mission Control, who's a brand I have not come across.
Mission Engineering.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, cool. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, everything I'm using at the moment is the Chox. What do I use? The four?
The four. The Chox stuff is, I've been really, I think that's what I'm going to get when I build my proper board with my first choice picks of everything.
Uh-huh.
You know, of like my extremely boutique-y, well, not extremely boutique-y, but fairly boutique distortions and things and like stuff. I'm like, this is my main board that I'll take to, I don't know, the lounge.
They're very good, just because they all do 9, 12, 15 and 18 volts, and all you've got to do is, you know, flick a little dip switch to get that rating.
So good. They seem super versatile. And are Chox ones that are all like really physically quite thin line as well?
Yeah, they're all very thin, and they've done something a little different in that they've gone for RCA adapters for the.
That's it. Yeah.
Just to make everything, they feel more robust and secure, less likely for things to fall out or anything. And they also they tell you if things are being overpowered as well, which is quite good with their light system, which is excellent. You know, so you don't to sort of.
Almost like a sort of traffic light system, LED type thing.
I think it just goes red if it's being overpowered, like the little LED.
Oh, sure, that's what I meant. Yeah,
but yes, in that case. it's just very useful. It's definitely the best kind of design. I feel like they've thought about everything, about how a power supply is going to be used on a board. And also with, not with the four, but with most of the others, you get a big proper kettle lead powering, which I feel a bit better about, rather than having, you know, the external transformer bit and some flimsy cable that could just get caught on something.
I'm very into that. That's always stressed me out, having, it just almost doesn't feel like a a whole complete unit if you don't have an IEC. And I know probably people who are way more in the know about electrics than I, JD, looking at you, are you know, reasoning more articulately about it. But yeah, like I still use the Moore, is it the Macro 8? Do you know the mega basic, very functional, utilitarian, like eight out multi-power supply that they do?
The time has come on this week's podcast to hear some gear. So let's check out some of the complete guitar amplification and effect solutions available from Neural DSP and their plugins. We've teamed up with Neural DSP a bunch over the last year or two. Matt and I are big fans of what they do, and we'd like you to become part of that. So use discount code GUITARNERDS at neuraldsp.com for 30% off, a whopping 30% off any of their plugins. Worth noting, you get a 14-day free trial with any of their plugins with no credit card required. So if you just want to see what all the fuss is about, you've got a whole 2 weeks on them with any of their amps and effects. Now this week I'm checking out the Pliny plugin suite. Pliny is one of the most innovative and refreshing electric guitarists of our generation. His distinct sound combines an unusually wide variety of styles, progressive, fusion and metal, all with impressive fluency and elegance. Neural DSP designed these plug-in amps a bit differently for Pliny. They engineered his dream amps and effects from the ground up to perfectly cover the vast dynamic tonal range that his music requires. These amp designs were then obsessively modelled with extreme accuracy. The result is three refreshingly new amplifiers, a crystal clear clean, a tight and articulate rhythm amp, and a powerful and defined lead amp. Virtual amplifiers that are not only unique but can also excel in their styles. Here's a track I built using only presets from the Pliny suite, and a bit of synth in there and drums. Perfect for elegant soundscape tones, super cleans, and some great 80s lead tones too. neuraldsp.com and use discount code GUITARNERDS at the checkout for 30% off any of their amp and effects plugins.
Oh yes, I know the one you mean. Well, I know it because I just looked it up, and that has a proper kettle lead output.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, it's a super basic version of the kind of nicer, fancier power supplies that we know and love, but it's the same in that each output is switchable and it's diverse. It's just very bricky and heavy.
Yeah.
the more unglamorous, cheaper end, I would say. But yeah, works a charm.
Yeah, that's the point. Okay, so we've got there's the board, the pedals, power supply. So what else are you going to take to the States? Are you hiring amplification over there?
No, I this makes me feel like a big boy. I have a US rig. Now,
yeah.
Which is made up of Eden and Ashdown.
Wow.
Very nice. So, great choice, JD.
Yeah, great. So choice. I have a basically early mid 90s era WT300 Eden head I want to go with, which is one that I'm very familiar with and have used that or similar for, since that time was the actual time on calendars. and then I ended up mostly it's just because of, well, one is because I sold all my Eden stuff when I moved to the UK, And also, I don't want to ship anything between them because that already cost a fortune once. So I ended up getting an Ashdown cab just mostly out of what was available and what was easy to sort of source. I would be happy with and like, but I ended up going with one of the MAG 414Ts,
A 4-ohm 410, right?
Yeah, 4-ohm 410, which I wanted because I was like, I'm just going to go with the single cabinet because we're Matt's playing, the guitar player's playing through like a single 12 or 212 guitar combo, so we're not doing like full stacks kind of stuff. So I was like, right. I just want a single cab, but I also want to make sure that I can be loud enough and get the most out of my amp. There aren't a lot of 4-ohm cabinets out there that I was sort of happy with, you know, and then it just sort of seemed like, oh, there's a 410 that's 4-ohm that really ticks a lot of boxes for me. And, you know, I like them and, you know, will sound good with, you know, I just sort of know what I'm going with and everything. So, yeah, I think it's a pretty sweet, you know, rig for a punkier band.
Sweet. And you get a compressor on the head, so you've got that dealt with.
Yeah. Yeah, so the thing is, I don't really use it, but it's kind of there if I need it.
Right.
I really was wanting to put a compressor on my board because it was, you know, I have a few that I really like, and you know, there's the CS2, which is much more of an effect compressor than like an always on.
Yeah.
But the JHS Pulp and Peel V4 is such a good always on compressor that I really did it. But then I was like, well, there's one built into the amp, which if I need it, I can have it. It's very transparent. I know it inside out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not going to be more of an issue. And it keeps me from, you know, just getting, you know, one of the bass rigs from Origin Effects or something just because I want to, or the Cali 76, which was something I almost got as well, just to try. So it's really, really just that. It's nothing too fancy. Like most of my belt allowed a tone is there's almost always some distortion on the signal. But my, you know, my chain for recording was eaten into a Red DI plugin.
Need the Eden to be clean, really, and then you're getting a lot of what you're doing from the Way Huge.
Yeah, yeah. I want the Eden to give me good solid tone throughout to sound right, and then everything else I can do. It's just a little bit of grit if I want or need it, or I could just go pretty straight because I haven't fully decided if I'm going to try to take one of my Stonefields or. What I think I'll probably end up doing, again, just because there's a bit of nightmare with all the travel stuff that seems to be happening now, is that I might just end up using, not a bad backup to have, mind you, Matt has a 70s Ripper. That's all black and, you know, sort of like, road worn and everything, so I was like, well, you know, I mean, I kind of don't mind.
That's a perfect punk rock bass, really, the Ripper, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, I mean, it's sort of, if I were going to do it, it's probably, it is, and I'm pretty stoked to have that. So it's a bit different than my normal sort of setup, but it also feels like it works pretty well and is this grand mix of things that are excellent, I think, you know, like pedals and amps and cabs are, and the bass are all excellent, but maybe not the exact thing that I would normally have, you know, or the exact one if I was like, what is my ideal, let me sit down and pick, you know, like 100%, but it's like, yeah, it's like this weird amalgam of everything that's great. It's like when I used to, you know, have my GI Joe guys and you take the screw out of the back and you like make a weird, like, Frankenstein's monster of other G.I. Joe guys. It's kind of like that.
Yes, I see. The with the Ripper, the Gibson Rippers, I feel like for years they were this hidden gem in the Gibson lineup, but also in, like, vintage gear. I'm a sucker for, you know, like, well-priced vintage gear. And the Ripper and the Grabber, they always seemed to fit into that. It was like, here is a 70s instrument made by one of the two biggest companies in the world for guitars and basses, and you can pick it up for sub £2,000. They always go for like £1,500, £1,800, £1,600, stuff like that. Now they have ascended. Now, if you can find one for like £2,200, that's a very good deal. I did see one on Facebook for like £18 last week, for a black one.
I think I probably saw that one too.
Yeah. but it seems to be like they'll be there for three, they'll be there for 3.2, 2.8, 2.5. Like, I mean, everything's obviously getting more expensive. I do appreciate that. But yeah, they are properly priced now, which is a shame. I feel like I've missed the opportunity to get a deal on a Ripper or a Grabber.
Guitar Nerds are sponsored by Reverend Guitars, and we're pretty happy about that. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, you'll know that we've been big fans of Reverend for years now, and we're continually impressed by the constant stream of new guitars and basses they bring to the table. The things that stand out to me is their signature range. Reverend have a roster of really interesting top-notch players who all seem to bring something completely unique to their signature model. None more so than the legend Greg Koch, now on his second guitar, the Gristle 90, following the Gristle Master. The Gristle 90 is a beautiful, tasteful blend of a classic T-style guitar with Firebird-esque aesthetic and a pair of wildly articulate P90s courtesy of Fishman and their Fluence series of pickups. It's a versatile, modern instrument with gorgeous alternate dimension classic looks, great colour options, and quality buildsmanship. Check it out and the entire range at reverendguitars.com.
Yeah, I feel the same with, like, there's a few other different basses, and basses I sort of feel like now where I have, like, some value in my head that is like, if I could find it for less than this, that's a good deal. And now the other thing is, like, it's something that if I would have paid some amount 4 years ago, 5 years ago, it would be much less than today. Mm. And that's sort of the guilt of not actually just being brave enough to buy the thing I really wanted at the time. Or I guess that's probably adulthood or whatever. but not doing that now and sort of saying, it's like, ooh, do I pay the same amount but in pounds for a thing? And it's like, ooh, I don't know, you know, and then what's going to happen is it's going to be another 5 years before I come back around to be like, well, they're how much now? So
take advantage of things while you can. Although, you know, on the upside, someone in the group on Facebook shared recently a very lovely, sort of nicotine yellow Fender, mid-70s Fender Music Master bass, which of course I'm a
I saw that.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, this is excellent. But yeah, and I mentioned in the comments, so I'm going to sell my black Music Master bass. The time has come. I wanted to keep holding on to it because, you know, they go for so much money now. They're like, you see them going
have
for,
they gone up?
Well, you see them for like £1,300 in some, but you know, you see them for £1,300 on like places like Bass Gallery where everything's always like the price of the instrument plus £200, you know?
Sure, yeah. But I feel like it's not that long ago that they were almost half that.
Well, I guess so. You see them for like £900. Like, you might see one for £900, but it would be on eBay being listed by an old fella who doesn't really know what's going on, and it's probably spelt Mazuic Master. Yeah. You know, it's like that. You'll see it for £900 then, but if people know what they're selling, they're £1,100, they're £1,200, they're £1,300. You know, so it has changed. I paid £400 for mine.
That's ace. I really like yours. Yours is the one with the almost like a tire mark going through it, isn't it? Like very, very lived in.
So weird. Yeah, it looks like someone's ridden over it with a bicycle, and the tire has taken off the finish, and then they've coloured it back in with like like nail varnish, because there's all drip marks.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah.
Where the paint is. Yeah. It's so weird.
It's like the forefather that inspired the Mikey way somehow.
I think what it is it was someone wrapped it in gaffer, I think, and when the person took the gaffer off, because the lines on it look very much like something was wrapped around it, so I think there was some gaffer wrapped on it, and when they took it off, it took the finish off and they painted it back in by hand. It's very weird, and of course, you know, when I bought it for £400 and it turned up in a bin bag, so I was lucky it was still kind of in one piece. The tuners aren't amazing, you know, they're really like, it's, you got to put a lot of effort into getting that low E to move, but you know, it's kind of there. And I put I kept the original, I put one of the McNelly sort of Bronco replacement pickups in there that's supplied by James's Home of Tone. I also got their lovely harness that they supply with that, with all the orange drop capacitors and whatnot to make it sound great, because of course those old Music Masters, they really sound naff. It's an old Strat pickup, you know. They're not good. But yeah, those upgrades made it sound really good. I got a new plate cut from Fidelity Guitars with lovely sort of like light relicking to it. Just, you know, just a little bit of wear into it so that it suits the body, and lovely beveling around the edges to emphasize the sort of the three ply plate. So it's really good. And the McNelly makes it sound like a proper bass. It's very good, but I'm not really using it for anything. They're going for a fair chunk of money. And I keep seeing stuff that I want to get, and I'm like, why am I sitting on a £1,200 guitar that I don't play? Like, it doesn't make sense for me to keep hold of it. I love the look of it. I'm never going to use it outside of this room that I'm in at the moment. So, which kind of leads me onto, and I don't think I maybe didn't give you guys this link. So I'll pop this in the old Facebook chat we've got going on, guys, so you can open it real time on the podcast, which leads me on.
Bear with me.
Yeah.
So, dear listener, so this tomorrow at 2:41 and 52 seconds British time, British summer time.
When we'll release the podcast now.
Well, yeah, actually it is. Yeah, that's when this finishes. So this is what we have here is last week, JD and Naomi, dear listener, you know, last week Matt Knight live bid on an effects pedal, hoping to get it, and he did not, because it went for like £500 or whatever. But so I'm not quite doing the same, because it doesn't finish till tomorrow, but. Nonetheless, in 17 hours and 32 minutes, as of when we're recording this Rickenbacker 4003 in Jet Glow, the only finish you should ever buy a Rickenbacker in. Looks great. Doesn't have the pickup cover, which is annoying, but I can buy those. I can buy those. Mm-hmm. I know people take them off to make them more playable, but, you know, I'm not sure if you want something to be playable, then a Rickenbacker's probably not the bass you should be going for. These things are going to be an effort. You know, and that's the charm of a Rickenbacker. Anyway, this is collection only in Brighton. Hello and welcome back to One Hot Minute, the segment where each week I take a minute of your podcast listening time to demo a piece of gear that I'm excited about. This week I'm checking out the brand new Queequeg 2 sub-generator octave pedal from KMA Audio Machines. The Queequeg 2 is a wonderfully innovative, which I think is tricky to do for an analog octave pedal. I love the way the controls work, just one simple great big mix knob bang in the middle of the pedal. All you have to do is decide how much of the octave signal you want to blend with your clean tone, so it's great for just adding a touch of thickening beneath your sound, or diming it and turning your bass or guitar into a full-on synth.
The only other control is a switch that pops you between one octave down, two octaves down, or a blend of both. They've gone into extra detail and made the LED change colours depending on what setting you're on, which is excellent for a gigging situation. Now, in this sound clip, I'm using the Octava on a short scale bass with the mix set just under halfway, so it's perfect for a mellow synthy bass tone that keeps all the organicness of my clean signal and just the right amount of dubby synthiness. The best analog octave I think you can buy. Loads of fun and a proper old school tones in an easy to use format. Now back to the podcast. Starting bid, 1500 quid, no bids, 17 hours to go. Just round the corner from me.
One bid.
No. Is there a bid?
No.
Oh.
No.
I was just going to say, why are you broadcasting this? Shut
damn
up.
It, damn it. But yeah.
No,
so,
this is a find. Yeah.
This is a find. Because they go for, what are they now, like 2,300 quid to buy new, something like that?
Yeah.
It's a chunk.
It doesn't say what year it is. I guess I can tell from the... I have a picture of the plate. Yeah. Oh, it's worn off. That's a good
yeah,
sign.
It's worn off. It looks like it's done a few rounds.
It's 2010.
Is
I
it?
Think.
Yeah, it's the current case, so it can't be that old. The hard case that's pictured. But you know, I said this to you the other day, JD, I think when I was talking about it. I always think about getting a Rickenbacker. The problem for me is I worked in a shop when Rickenbackers were 1749 new, and so for me, even though I appreciate the prices change and the things get more expensive, but that is ingrained in me as that's what a Rickenbacker is worth, 1749, 1800 quid. That's how much I think of it. So the fact that they're now like 2,200-2,300 quid for a new one, I'm like, there's a lot more money for the same guitar, you know. And I just as soon as you're over that $2,000 thing, I'm like, we're getting on for custom shop pricing here. I know not Fender custom shop starts at three now. I appreciate everything's more expensive, but I guess it's just me being old and still having that old idea of what pricing should be. And it just feels like 2,300 quid is more than this should be, than this particular product, this standard line US built guitar should be.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, the second hand market, try and find one for less than two. You know, I was looking at one on Bass Brothers, for like 1900 quid, and flipping Guy Pratt bought it. I didn't know that at the time until I turned up to interview him a couple of weeks later, and he had his new black bass. He was like, oh yeah, I got it off of Bass Brothers. They gave me 100 quid off because I'm Guy Pratt, you
know. I mean, that doesn't That's make me feel so great good. About asking for a deal then, does it?
Yeah, but
I mean, this the other thing that I really like about this Rickenbacker is it's like some of the wear it has is really good, proper wear.
Uh-huh.
You know, like you see chips and stuff where you expect to see chips.
Yeah. You talk about this sort of age-old, like, Fender custom shops where, you know, the backs of the necks are worn down, which is not something that happens, you know, on vintage gear.
Like, I think, I mean, this is an excellent shout, really. This is... Yeah, if it stays this price, I think this is completely reasonable. But I also agree with you, and you know, we've said plenty of times on here that, you know, I used to work at Rickenbacker, and so I also have like my own. I don't have one. I always kind of look for them. I kind of always say one because I want to see if there's ones that come up that I can tell are ones that I built or helped build, and I saw one the other day that I'm 95% sure it's there. There's usually a little piece of tape on the inside that'll have like JD in it. if it's mine, but it was one of the 2003 like Blue Boy when they did that finish.
Blue Boy, dear listener, if you're not aware, is like Rickenbacker's version of Daphne Blue.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure I've seen that actually.
Yeah, it was because they used to do. I don't know if they still do. They would do special runs of each year its own special color, and the Blue Boy was
beautiful.
Yeah,
are you into that? Lovely. Do you like that name? That they always sat at odds for me. I was like, I'm not sure a surf color and a Rickenbacker match up for me. A Rickenbacker should be Cherry Burst or black. You know, to
yeah.
I'll be honest. I've said this to both you guys off the pod before, but I'm not visually. I know it's such a classic, but I'm not visually a big fan of Ricky Bass bodies, and this has given it some sort of strange facelift to me, having not seen this finish before. I think I don't know. It's like literally fresh step away from the classic finishes, I guess.
Yeah, I think they do look really great in person too, but it feels like there's something that feels off about it, which I can totally get if you don't normally like the body shape, being like, oh, there's something intriguing about this. And if you do like that, and like the classic, you know, Jeklo Rickenbacker, you know, like the black with white binding and everything, and the, you know, you just be like, oh, that's the look that they also feel a bit weird, because you're like, would Lemmy play a baby blue Rickenbacker? Which is, you know, what I asked myself. But I think just because of what I was doing at the time when I was there, when that was the color of the year, it feels like almost all of them came through like my station, because it was like because they're the special edition ones. And so it was just like, oh, I was looking at it, but it was almost $4,000.
And oh my God. And I was like,
nope. I was like, if I had access to that amount of money, and something came up that was one of the actual like Lemmy bases, you know, the Lemmy signatures with the carved and everything I also did, you know, that it would be like, ooh, and that's sort of my dream of like, if I could find one that I know I worked on that was one of those, it would be great just to have as like a memento.
Yeah.
You know, sure. And also a dope bass. But you know, it's just, yeah, kind of, you know, just that's going to be one of those. That will be one of the miracle finds, you know, of.
Yeah. Yeah.
That may or may not happen. You know, like I want to just come across it one day and being like, huh, I just sold something I wasn't expecting to sell, and then be like, oh, look at this. So,
yeah. Guitar Nerds are teaming up with Music Nomad, and I really think, nerds, you need to check out musicnomadcare.com. We've spoken about all their wonderful guitar maintenance products on the podcast, and I really can't emphasize how important it is to look after your gear, and how easy Music Nomad make that for you with things like their how-to advice center and their setup hub. Music Nomad have been around for a little over 10 years, and in that time they've become one of the most recognized brands for guitar tech gear. They're available worldwide in every guitar store you can think to name, and it's for a good reason. All their products are professional grade quality. Every tool, and even the cases the tools come in, are designed for proper, rugged, on-the-road use. Make sure you check out what all the buzz is around Music Nomad, as they are redefining and raising the bar for equipment care. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com or follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare.
We'll see. Well, one of the other Rickenbackers that you actually sort of slightly warned me off of, JD, when I was thinking about getting one, was the Rickenbacker 4004L, the Laredo. Is that how you say it?
The Laredo.
Laredo, yeah. Which is something that Rickenbacker did in 2015, where it's kind of like a stripped back, plateless Rickenbacker 4003 is kind of the gist of it. But so they take away the white plate, the white Rickenbacker logo on the headstock. So that's made black. And they also put in humbuckers instead of the single coil pickups of a Rickenbacker. And then
The bridge is way stripped back as well, isn't it?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I think it's just a shallow bridge. And it's shallow white tuners as well. And then it's just like a simple one volume, one tone on like jazz bass style switches. And then they even do like, it's like a mini switch for the pickup selector as well. So it's very much a sort of modern Rickenbacker. But I was like, now this is still cool. It's still Rickenbackery and it's still sleek and stuff and lovely. And I found one for $17.50. I'm going to pop that in the little group for you both to have a look at as well. The problem with this one, not problem, but someone had made it more stealth and changed the tuners for black shallow tuners and the bridge for a black shallow bridge, which almost that veered it too modern for me. I was like, oh, is this really a Rickenbacker now that it's sort of stealthy?
It kind of reminds me of like the Fenders you used to see in like, I don't know, maybe early 2000s or so, where people had, you know, 70s, 80s, maybe even early 90s kind of era Fenders and had just done loads of home mods to things.
Totally.
Or just tried to take a jazz bass and make it, you know, make it be an Alembic or something, you know, and then, or sort of vice versa. You're just trying to see it. Like, that's definitely the vibe I get from this Laredo specifically, which, I mean, if it were my thing, I would definitely get it. I think for me, it's like, because I've been looking to get a Rickenbacker for a decade, and it's like, is this the one? Not for me, but, you know, if someone were like, hey, do you want this? I'd be 100%, I will adore this.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is very good. I mean, I was strongly thinking about it. There was only, you know, until this, obviously this other Rickenbacker option has presented itself. And tomorrow, dear listener, we'll find out. But for me, there was one other contender on this next base. This is another link I've just placed in the Facebook for the two of you there. A bit more up Naomi's street potentially here. It is a Reverend Triad.
Oh.
Which
a fave.
Is, yes, yes.
A fave. Adore the Triad.
It's very good. So Reverend's take on a jazz bass, only they've added three humbucking jazz bass pickups.
Oh, good.
Which is great. I kind of think like that this bass, I imagine this bass sounds somewhere between like a super trebly, supercharged jazz bass and also has a bit of that sort of Burns Bison Wild Dog setting.
That's an interesting take.
Three humbuckers on a bass.
Yeah, it's so hybridized. If you're not familiar, listener, it's almost got this aerodyne touch with binding on the body. JD, you having just spoken about the 2000s Fender designs, it's got this. Yeah. It's a green finish, but it's a beautiful green burst.
Yeah. Which is very Burnsy. Whenever I see
is very Burnsy,
I think of Burns.
Yeah. Oh, okay. It might have just been triggered because you were just speaking about that era, JD. But the first kind of coming of age Fender catalogs I owned were like, I don't know, 2004, 5, 6. And at the time, some of their slightly more metal specced sort of strap bodies that Fender were doing, they were doing like beautiful like black into green and black into red bursts, and this sort of harks to that. But it's I think supercharged jazz bass is probably the most accessible way to describe it, but it's got that that beautiful five-piece neck. It's got inlays.
Yeah, roasted maple neck, black block inlays. Very, very cool. Yeah. Huge bridge, Tele-style control plate with the volume tone, and then the switch is a five-way. I guess it's a five-way.
It is. Yeah, it is a five-way. I've not yet had a chance to play a Triad, but I almost would take a punt on buying one, such as my reverend love. I probably would, in fact. I just don't.
Well, it just seems to me like the most versatile. For me, this guitar kind of sits a bit at odds with what I like. I know it's got binding, which I think of being very traditional, but you're right, the binding on this model harks more to the Aerodyne style. And for me, Aerodyne is like, I think whoever invented it should have been shot, because it's the worst thing Fender have ever done.
What? How did I not know this was your Aerodyne opinion? I'm officially leaving the podcast now. Offline.
I'm sorry. It's so 80s in all the in all the wrong ways.
And
I think it's where you see Aerodyne basses, and it's like bad metal bands. That's where you see Aerodyne basses. And I think maybe that's it. I've been introduced.
You've noticed
to the
I've stopped
now.
Arguing when you made that point. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful instrument. It's come on. Can't people have, like, you know, their guilty pleasure Icemans and Aerodyne be the one that they admit to?
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's the weird domed knobs on an Aerodyne as well.
I think there's, like, for me, like, I'm with Aerodyne, I'm skewing Joe. And I for me, it just always feels like there's something weird about it. And I think most of it is the fact that it was Fender doing it. So I think it's a lot of my own, you know, predisposed biases around it doing that. That if it would have been like Love Fender, a French company, you know, I'd be like, oh well, yeah, this is totally cool. It makes sense. But yeah, there's something that just felt, I don't know, it felt a bit like, you know, if you had a friend's dad that was trying to dress cool when you were a kid, and you were like,
exactly what the Aerodyne is. Yeah, because that's the thing. When people play Aerodynes, I think they think they look slick. I think they think the instrument is like a...
Yeah, that's because they're right, Joe. I can't believe I'm having to explain this to you. I look up to you in so many ways. Anyway, sorry, go on.
No, that's it. I think the Aerodyne is... when people play them, it's like, this is this slick thing. I'm like, it just looks... It looks like a butchered Fender to me, but you know, I'm fully aware that as soon as Fender do a new color, I'm like, no, that's awful. You know, it's has this not vintage correct? You know, it has to.
You absolute to art auctioneer.
Such
a good purist voice. Yeah, exactly. What just briefly on the topic of Aerodyne? Yeah. What about like any of like the candy apple red finish, or like the sunburst Aerodynes that you see very rarely pass through but give it a totally different vibe? What about those?
Yeah, very rarely see the sunburst. The red one you occasionally see. It is candy apple red. And I will say, when it's in candy apple red, you lose all that sort of faux metalness that the black one has.
Well, yeah. And you have the matching headstock as well, don't you?
Exactly. It almost looks how I imagine people who like Aerodynes think they look. Like
this is, we've entered some sort of like gear gaslight labyrinth. I'm loving this. It's really.
I'm going to have to put a J-Cross like trigger warning at the beginning of this just to make sure he doesn't ever listen.
Oh, yeah. Right. I'm in your corner, Jay.
Yeah, we definitely will. I think they look all right, because when it's in red, it kind of looks slick. It makes the binding look vintage, you know. It makes it look like a cool 50s thing, whereas when it's in black, it looks like an 80s thing. So you're right. Maybe it is the color that makes a big difference. But I mean, bringing it back to that, the Reverend Triad, that's where I'm like, oh, I can't work out what this binding does. Does it make it look retro? Is it a bit aerodyne-y? I'm not sure. You know, the five-piece neck is modern. Like, when it goes into the headstock, that reminds me of, like, Yamaha BBs from the early 2000s, which you know, is totally fine. It looks great in its own right. It does nothing for my obsession with vintage-style stuff. And whilst Reverend are certainly harking to that 50s surfy look, there's so much of it that's modern that sits at odds with my weird, you know, sort of obsessive-compulsive need for vintage correct things. All of that aside, funnily enough, I think that's probably the perfect bass. Like, for sound, I think a supercharged jazz bass with more versatility than a jazz bass, a jazz bass being sort of, you know, the absolute top of, you know, being a bass that can do just about every sound you need, I imagine it sounds great. And I think about how much I like, you know, use things like clean boosts, compressors with, you know, big tone controls, and how I try and squeeze every ounce of treble out of instruments. This, I imagine, would do a fantastic job of almost being like part Music Man Stingray, part jazz bass, super bright, lovely. I bet it would sound great with pedals, make every amp sound lively. Fantastic build. Everything about it's great.
One other thing that I love about like any Reverend model I've played, I don't want to assume this about the Triad, but it's a fairly safe guess, is that they're passive, but have really, really active sort of level of output, and as well that all the controls are really responsive. You have a wonderful sweep from kind of 0 to 10. So any tone that you're either dialing in or rolling back off, it can be really effective. So in the gig, it's not that you're kind of, I don't know if you guys are anything like me, like I'm so tactile with like switches and knobs and faders, like particularly because I sort of play synth as well, that like during a gig, if I'm doing something like rolling off or like switching pickups or something, I really want to hear it even back through whatever monitors I'm using. And with my Mercalli, and again, any other model that I've played, so that's like Wattplayer, Thundergun, Sentinel, I think. There's a wonderful responsiveness to Reverend. They just they're just a brand that do so well across all appointments. I always struggle to find anything I can really fault in any of their builds, which is really nice to be able to say about a pretty mass production company.
They're absolutely brilliant. I mean, you know, guitar nerds have been friends with Reverend for years. I've actually booked Ken to come back on. Haas from Reverend to come back on an episode. He hasn't been on for probably a couple of years now. So he's coming back on Dear Listener in, I think, 3 or 4 weeks, something like that, to join us, which would be lovely. JD, you've just shared something I didn't know existed, an eBay link to something called, and Dear Listener, tell me if you knew what this was, because I certainly didn't. The Fender Prophecy 2, which the instrument itself is as bad as the name suggests. 1994, 1995, when apparently Fender were looking to Washburn for how to design a bass.
Sorry, what in the T or B is this?
Yeah, it looks like...
1994, okay.
Fender does Encore.
Or like an Alvarez or something like that. Like,
yeah, this is going to have to post in the group so our listeners can get a good listen. But that deep blue wash is just 90s, 2000s everything, isn't it?
It's definitely someone just being like, maybe this is the market. I mean, that being said, it was before it's the era where you probably saw P basses for sure the least. And then, you know, this was every band had a bass player with, you know, neck through like a Tobias or a Spectre or something. But yeah, I can't remember the name of it. It was very close to this, but I had my first 5-string was a Fender. I feel like it was like SB5 or FM5 or it was something like that. But it looked very much like this, like a completely non-fendery looking fender.
Right.
And okay. Yeah, it was weird. And then, yeah.
Yes. No. Well,
yeah, that's basically that's it. There's not much more to say besides. Yeah. This is weird, and I feel like I have to take a moment to just appreciate like the Samick-ness of this fender.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. Oh well. Super weird. We're getting towards the end of the podcast, but before we go, I want to talk a little bit because obviously JD, you're off to the US. To play some shows. I'm going to Naomi, you and me are going to see each other this weekend. We're both going to the same festival.
Damn straight.
Strange
Nerds
Forms
United.
Festival. Yeah, Strange Forms Festival in Leeds. My band Polymath are playing on the Saturday, but I think you've got some session work on the Saturday.
I have indeed. Have right? Some very glamorous session work outside of Leeds on the Saturday. So sadly, I will not be flooding the Guitar Nerds group with Polymath footage. But we can get a nice little suite of pictures of us with pints or something like that.
There you go. Because we'll both be there on the Sunday of the festival to watch a bunch of great bands. And I think that following week, I'm going to make sure the podcast is focused on all the amazing gear, because Strange Forms is a festival of weird and unusual music, and it means that with that comes weird and unusual gear. So we'll be able to talk about some of that. But you've just got back from, or you recently went to Dublin, and you saw some music there.
I did indeed. Yeah, I went home to Dublin. My born and brown bred city, to see my old band play their last gig. So that was a band that I was in for some years, left a few years ago, but obviously remained on great terms with the guys. So it was a wonderful sort of grungy heavy
oh, cool.
heavy indie band of many influence by the name of Bitch Falcon. And I think in their latter days were on Small Pond Records. You probably know Small Pond.
Yeah, they were indeed, yes.
Is Small Pond Brighton?
Small Pond are Brighton. In fact, yeah. Vlad, the owner of Small Pond, is one of my best mates.
Oh, amazing.
In fact, I have his the Fender 51 P bass that I have, the Japanese reissue one that I have here, is his.
Oh, amazing.
But yeah, he's a very good friend. But yes, I was aware that Bitch Falcon were... I didn't know until just this moment that they were your ex-man, but I very much was aware of them being on Small Pond.
Oh, right. That's so funny. Yeah. As with everything, remained great pals with the guys, and made sure to catch their last show in Whelan's, which is an amazing, quite long-standing gig venue in Dublin. Yeah, and so I guess the main thing, I suppose, gear-wise to report is maybe quite classic of the band, in that it's been in the band for quite some time. But Lizzie, who sung and played guitar in the band for many years, has boasted a pawn shop, but that Fender reverse body supersonic in red sparkle. Are you guys familiar?
Yes, very much so. So the Nick Reinhardt guitar of choice. But yes, that
exactly.
certainly is
that's
the guitar
exactly
that's very much the Bitch Falcon guitar. But yes, I think that one must be one of the Japanese ones, because it's the Fender one, not the Squire.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah. And this would have been from 2015.
Right.
I feel.
Right.
2015, maybe. 2014, 2015, absolutely superb guitar, has lasted Lizzie very, very well. She also, I'm keen not to assume anything of Rig, having not been in the band for some time, obviously, but a great proponent of unreasonably large pedal boards at all times, I would say. one of the kind of fixed residence, I suppose, on the board that I came to know very well by ear was the Earthquaker device's pitch bay. Do you guys remember the pitch bay?
Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of like pitch shift and chorus, heavy distortion and flanger. That sort of like really kind of spacey, ooky kooky kind of tone was very much Lizzie's thing. And she sounded absolutely ripping through the walls of Whelan's last Friday. So that was superb. Sorry, it's not a more detailed gear report, but obviously it's hard not to be very biased when it's your old band. And I wasn't even like doing anything like drinking a lot or anything. I was just like, it's really nice that, you know, it's going to be the last time the world's going to hear the songs live. So it's hard to do that and be like, and what pedals have you bought, Lizzie, in the last 4 years? Tell me.
Well, dear listener, definitely go and check out Bitch Falcon if you haven't already, because they do make excellent weird noises. So
yes, absolutely
thoroughly worth your listening time. Oh, that pretty much brings us up to time on this week's podcast. Dear listener, we haven't answered the question that I said would answer by Carl Harris. Actually, if you remember, dear listener, at the end of last week's episode, I said that we were going to spend a big chunk of this episode talking about the Katana Bass app, and we haven't done that either. So so potentially join us over on Patreon, where we might or might not talk about those things. You can do that, patreon.com/guitar nerds. We do an extra episode every week. You can become a supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you get this episode ad-free and early every week. And there are a lot of ads on this podcast at the moment. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special episode and our entire back catalogue. And $10 gets you the lot, plus I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on all your favourite social media platforms. Join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook and get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Me.
Daniel Walker, Ben Harder, Provo Six, and Holly Simpson, Sean Cutaway, and Paul Drew, Russell Healing, Yogan, and guitarist Ty Allen, Carl Harris, Joe Hubbard, Sean Hughes, Brian Hanson, Andy Hoffler, Eric Kemmer, Jeffrey White, and Shane M. Brian Hines, the Gavin Bender, Lindy, Mark Gazal, Kanawaki, Stuart Robson, Christian Manhattan, Keith Adams, Eric Fahl, Peter Pest, Conanti, Jack Cutmore, Andy Bradley, Simon Milburn, Sayers, Joe Potting, Blake White, and Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, John Anglin, Aaron Shepard, James Stoll, Ryan McDermott, Jake Gray, Terry Grinch, Scott Kennedy, Steve Muggle, A. Matthews, Christopher Lawson, Stephen Berg, Robin Smith, Titopia the Band, Dennis Shaw, Danny McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Gorick, Scott O'Byrne, and Boo Brevett.